All right, we're back in open session and recording.
Yeah, so this case did not go to the investigative committee. It was opened by the board, and we have two separate issues here. So one, we received a complaint regarding unlicensed staff member that was performing surgeries there. There was discussion at the last meeting with regard to whether this individual was licensed. He was going to school, going to a veterinary college in Mexico. It was not accredited. He was, you know, the college did send a letter to Dr. Lambert's office asking that he be considered for an internship there. So there was a disagreement, I guess, with regard to whether Dr. Lambert and this individual understood what he could and could not be doing. We did send a cease and desist, and my understanding is that this individual will no longer be performing any duties outside of what he was allowed. And then the other issue, of course, was that we had some repeat premise violations. There were 13 violations on our last visit, and the kind of big ones being expired products, unlocked and missing controlled drugs. So those are the two different issues there. And so I might not get entire agreement on some of this. But I'm gonna start with offering Dr. Lambert a consent agreement, and the violations being 3222.32 number 18 as it relates to R311.502J2, which is the expired medications. Again, this was a repeat issue. And then the second one, ARS 3222.32.18, as it relates to R311.502D, which is the expired supplies. Also another repeat issue. Again, I know there was, Dr. Lambert had stated that there was some disagreement on her part, that these were issues, but because she did not submit any proof otherwise, we're moving forward on those items. And then the third violation, 3222.32.18, as it relates to R311.805B, this was the prescription-only items being stored in exam rooms. Again, another repeat violation. And then lastly, I've got 3222.32 number 18 as it relates to 3222.74A. Does that sound right? Mm-hmm. There was an unaccounted for large quantity of a controlled substance. That was the one that was in the big Ziploc bag, I believe, right? So that was going to be my consent agreement for the premise violations. Should we start with that and then see if the other, or should I tie in? So I wonder if I should have done this backwards. Victoria knows what I'm talking about, but nobody else probably does.
These are your conclusions of law for the consent agreement?
Do we have that since we were the...
So, Ms. Frager, I think you started out by saying there's kind of two separate issues, the premises issues and the unlicensed practitioner. So
right.
I think you're asking, and it may be a question to Mark, of in this particular first motion for a consent agreement, should it just focus on one of those two issues?
Right.
And then vote on that and then come back to the second? Or do they only be included in the same motion? Or if
It doesn't necessarily have to be included in the same motion. It is going to be in the same consent agreement.
Okay.
So, you know, we could take it in steps.
Okay, why don't we do that? And then, as far as, so I would have this, this consent agreement signed within 30 days or remanded to an informal.
Let's, if it's okay, let's just take a vote on the proposed findings and conclusions, and then address the second issue, and then you can talk about, you know, what kind of order you want to offer.
Okay.
The terms of the order.
Okay, so is there a second?
So the findings of fact would be per the premise inspection report?
Yes.
And the conclusions of law would be what you named already. I'll second that.
All right. We got a motion on the floor, a second. Any further discussion?
The findings of fact, or is that the investigative division report?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, any further discussion? Then.
Roll call.
That's it, roll call.
Dr. Byrne?
Aye.
Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James is an aye. Mr. Wilkie?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
Dr. Wright is a aye. Well, that motion passes 8-2. Okay, so with regard to the unlicensed individual, I might not have agreement on this one, but I was actually, I was going to consider a letter of concern. I know this person did not meet the legal definition of a veterinary student. I guess I felt like when we had Dr. Landman in that she, clearly she didn't do her due diligence to understand, you know, these different rules and laws, and he was not actually allowed to perform surgeries, but I, you know, she suggested that the letter she received, she believed that this person was a medical student and they were allowed to do this. My understanding, again, of the staff, when we reached out to this individual performing the surgeries, is that he also was under the impression that he was allowed to do some of these things and that he is no longer going to be doing that.
And do that for a minute.
What's that?
I do not believe that for a minute. He knew before he crossed the board, he was not going to a veterinary college that would allow him to do an internship here. He knew that.
And my concern is, even if you had a student working for you, you wouldn't typically refer to them as a doctor. They're not a doctor. They're working for you as an intern, but this was clearly, they referred to him as a doctor. And that was, I think, where it stepped a little long.
Okay.
But, that's what's my opinion.
I just think, Dale.
So, that one.
So now on the letter of concern, and then, well, as
you could make a motion on the letter of concern and see what other people do.
Okay, well, I'll make the motion still for a letter of concern. See if anybody has a second.
Go ahead. Chir.
Looks like they're dying in flames. Want to try again?
No. So this was the, yeah, do you,
32, 22, number 6, which is, really would be lending one thing to the illegal practice of veterinary medicine in the case of this unlicensed practitioner. Next stands alone, right, Mark?
Can I second it since she mostly said it? Second.
Motion on the floor is second to define the violation 32, 22, 32, 6. Any further discussion?
Roll call.
Roll call.
Dr. Byrne?
Aye.
Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James, aye. Mr. Wilhite?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
Dr. Wright's recused. Motion passes.
So two-thirds of the way there.
Okay, so for the consent agreement for the premise issues, regard to that one, I was gonna do a $1,000 civil penalty paid within 90 days. I was gonna ask that the consent agreement be signed within 30 days or remanded to informal. I was not gonna do any CE, but I was going to ask Victoria and her staff to do another repeat inspection within a year's time. I think, do I need to ask for history or anything else at this time?
You don't need change. You don't need wood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Tracy, do you have any history?
I do. So let's see here. In 2014, there was a letter of concern with respect to medical record keeping admissions. In 2016, Dr. Manman was found in violation of malpractice, gross negligence, and gross incompetence for failure to use scientifically accepted diagnostic methods to evaluate a critically ill patient, not referring a patient for immediate care, engaging in a critical care for a patient that it was distinct, failure to communicate the seriousness of the disease process to the owner. Also, ARS 3222312 as it relates to R3115019 for altering records. ARS 3222318 as it relates to R3191B for failure to submit timely response to a complaint as required. And she was placed on probation for 2 years. She was ordered to do 12 hours of continuing education, including 6 in critical care and or emergency in the area of cardiopulmonary crisis and 6 hours in ethics. She was also ordered to do, or to pay a $500 civil penalty. And let's see here. In 2020, she had some medical record keeping issues. ARS 3222-3221 as it relates to R311502H2 for failure to perform an exam on the animal prior to the dental procedure. 502-7, failure to document the name of fluids administered to the pet. R311502L2 for failure to document in the medical record the dog's weight. And failure to document in the medical record the dog's respiration rate. She was placed on probation for 1 year, ordered to do 4 hours of continuing education and medical record keeping, and a civil penalty of $500. And in 2011, it looks like that was ARS 3222-3212 as it relates to R311511, failure to use current professional scientific knowledge regarding detecting. Oh, this is the one that was for the one that you guys just denied the review. So you have information on that. And you have guys that placed her on probation for 1 year. But I guess that's not happening yet because that's still under review.
Yeah. So as part of your deliberations, please help me include that.
Okay. Quite a rap sheet, but I mean, does anyone feel the need to add anything else for the premise piece of it that, you know, we'll get through, send a message.
Yeah, I mean, I think the premise issues are very different than the issues that we've had before, which was more around medical records. But medical records and the premise is a lot of what we're looking at. So they do kind of link, and I feel like we've done multiple 500. C doesn't really seem to be setting in, so we might want to consider something different.
What are we going to do with regard to the unlicensed practitioner? Then would we add another civil penalty on top of that? Or like, what CE? There's no CE that's really. We place her on probation for.
If it's just a civil penalty, normally you wouldn't.
So.
Yeah, and I don't really.
I mean, you can do censure, you could CE in ethics would be.
Okay.
Or a civil penalty for that as well. Or you could do $1,000 per violation.
I feel like if you even do 500 per violation, you're 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you're at 2,500.
Okay. Well,
but
I mean, at this point, that might be.
I would, the unlicensed practitioner, I would move that. I would do the match on that one, so.
Yeah, I agree.
Which it would be.
And what I would say is I just feel like she's clearly done a lot of CE.
Yeah.
I mean, she did 6 hours in ethics and six
right.
hours in critical care emergency. She's done 4 hours in medical records. She's had an opportunity to learn and change. And she's, even though these are slightly different issues, the CE may not be taking hold. I mean, ethics is what we're talking about for the unlicensed practitioner, and she's already done that. The medical records and documenting things is fairly consistent with what we say for premise issues, and that hasn't helped. So I don't know. I just feel like a heavier civil penalty might be the way to improve that these things can't continue to be.
Mr. Chairman, I think based on the history that was just read to us, of the numerous previous violations, that the maximum civil penalty for each violation should be set on this also.
So is that, do you consider that 500 or 1,000 for each?
1,000.
By law, you can do 1,000 each.
So that would be 5,000 then, since we have did 4 for the premise and then.
This has been going on for years and years.
Let's do 5,000 then. We'll skip CE or anything else, and again, paid within 90 days.
The only thing is, because it is such a time, you might want to give her more time for 90 days.
I'm sorry, Victoria.
Because it's such a high amount, you may want to give her more than 90 days.
That's 20 days.
Could we include verbiage that the repeat premise inspections, that the violations must be corrected? Like, here are some ideas. You could do a practice monitor, you could hire out, like similar to what we did in the last one, because like I get that we're going to send the board out to do these again, but I want to make sure we give her everything we can to make her aware that there's options out there for how to do it.
She's kind of denying some of them. But
yeah,
again, she wasn't demonstrating that she had no.
I just want to send a message that the issue is these repeated things have got to stop. We've got to take action that's going to fix it, not just keep letting it continue to go on.
And hopefully the penalties will get that across. Since nothing else has in the past.
Anything else I need to add, or is that?
Only went to 120 days.
120 days, yeah.
And it's, so for your 1,000 each, the unlicensed practitioner, one of those, and you have four?
Yeah.
All right, so that's the motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. And any further discussion? Do a roll call.
Dr. Byrne?
Aye.
Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James is an aye. Mr. Lohme?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
And Dr. Wright is recused.
Okay, so that motion passes. And that concludes investigative reviews.
We can get Dr. Wright back.
We can get Dr. Wright back. Where are we then? Down to section 5, number 1, board member review discuss take action on the unlicensed practitioner case C2205 in regards to Allison McKee. We're at that time period now. That is on your agenda, I believe. Thank you for being here today. Would you please state your name for the record?
I'm Allison McKee.
Thank you.
You ready for me to start?
Yes, I don't think we have anybody taking the lead on this, so you can lead us and we'll chat in.
Okay. Good afternoon. Thank you for allowing me to address you all about the allegations brought against me by Steve and Jennifer Lane. The Lanes claim that I was practicing veterinary medicine is completely untrue, and I hope the board will decide to dismiss this case in its entirety. My husband and I legally run a small private horse boarding facility at our home, and in accordance with our property zoning, I am not a veterinarian, I am not a vet tech. I am an equine enthusiast with many years of experience in handling, training, and care for horses and donkeys. My husband and I give very personalized and excellent care to all the horses on our property. The Langs boarded 3 different horses with us over a span of approximately 5 years. In those 5 years, we heard nothing but praise from Steve and Jennifer. It was only after the termination of their boarding contract that the Langs manipulated my kindness, caring, and continual help with their horses into a series of false allegations brought before you today. I hope that you have all read my response in corresponding communications between myself, the Langs, and their vet, Dr. Stacy Sigler, in their entirety. All of this documentation clearly shows that any care I provided was always under the direction of their vet, with their knowledge and consent, and in the best interest of their animals. hope you will see this complaint for what it is, a vindictive and hateful act brought forth by two people who quite simply behaved badly and were asked to leave our facility. There's so much I can say to you, but in the interest of brevity, I will highlight 2 points, or shall I say 2 lies, that I can prove as such that the Langs made in their allegations. The first is a claim that the Langs had no experience with boarding facilities prior to mine. The Langs boarded their forest lady at AZ Star Ranch prior to boarding at our facility. I know this to be true because I transported the horse to and from that facility for the Langs. The second is that I maintain stocks of prescription medications. The Langs have no access to my house where I keep prescription medications for the horses, and therefore could not possibly have any knowledge of what or how much prescription medications I have. To make such a claim is absolutely ridiculous and another lie. There is a third lie, which the Langs told, that led to the termination of their boarding contract. Steve and Jennifer Lang lied to Dr. Stacy Sigler about their horse lady's dangerous propensity to sit or pull back when tied, a behavior that would impact the equipment used to treat their horse for dehydration and could put the vet and her assistant at risk of injury. I would love to speak more about the depth of the events that led up to this day, the lack of care that the Langs sought for their horse, and the difficulty my husband and I had watching their horse suffer on our property for 3 full days until they finally decided to seek veterinary care. None of that has anything to do with the allegations brought against me today. I would just say that when the Langs finally had Dr. Sigler out to attend their very sick horse, that they were rude and knowingly lied to her about the horse pulling back. I cannot and will not tolerate anyone putting another person at risk of injury on my property. The Langs furthered this lie by stating to me that they did not know what the terminology sit or pull back meant. Please note that I have provided a text thread between Steve Lang and myself that proves that he knew exactly what the vet was talking about. It was not an easy decision to terminate the Langs boarding contract when one of their horses was sick. However, I think you will all agree that safety must be everyone's top priority. Handling 1,000-pound animals and the Langs showed blatant disregard for the safety of Dr. Sigler and her assistant, Corey Ebersol. In summary, the Langs seem to have no problems lying. In fact, this entire complaint and the allegations within are what I stated earlier, a manipulation, a vindictive act, another big lie. And I hope that you all make the decision to completely dismiss this today.
Thank you. Thank you for being here today. I thought, I don't want you to think you wasted time here, because you did not, but I pretty much knew how I was going to vote for you got here. And it was pretty clear, especially working as closely as you did with the veterinary, which is how every animal owner should. And particularly in your situation where you're caring for other people's animals and your own animals on your property, having that relationship with the veterinary is perfect. And everybody should do that. So, to me, that all cleared the air.
Thank you.
So, any other members of any?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is Jane Solomon. I have a couple of questions. One, in your email of October the 1st, 2017, you referenced giving a Banamine injection to Lucy. Is that correct?
I don't have any records prior to 2018. I know that the Langs provided other information to you. I don't recall doing that. And I do want to point out that Lucy is not a horse that's even mentioned in this, in the allegations. They only mention Kylie and Lady.
Yes. But please understand that the issue before the board is whether it's an unlicensed practice.
I understand.
email a Gmail account, and you document as giving Evanamine injection to Lucy. I don't have the exact date of the injections, but the date of the email is October 1st, 2017 at 7:05 a.m. I do have a follow-up question also, another point of fact. You mentioned you keep our prescription medications in your residence. Are any of those injectable?
Yes.
Thank you.
I had some follow-up questions kind of around the same round here, because we do have that email that says, it says the Evanamine injection I gave Lucy is $15, so there's a charge for that, and that was October 1st, 2017. Evanamine is a prescription medication. Was that done under the order of a veterinarian? You said you don't know much about this, or would you give an Evanamine injection without the direction of a veterinarian for a prescription medication?
Every time I give Evanamine to any animal on the property, I contact our vet every single time.
Okay.
I think that she would let you know that.
You can't purchase it without a prescription.
That was my next question, is where did you obtain these medications that are prescriptions? Because are you licensed at a dispensary to hold these medications, or are you licensed to have medications for these specific animals themselves that are dispensed through a veterinarian? Are these your stock? What's going on with that?
I have, from our veterinarian, Evanamine to give in emergency situations when the horse is caught.
So an open prescription that you hold at the facility?
I'm sorry?
An open prescription, so the bottle is not labeled for a specific animal?
In some instances...
Can I ask your questions, please?
In some instances, yes, it is labeled for a specific animal.
Do you have other medications like phenobutazone or these kinds of things that you keep on hand, on stock at your facility?
Are you saying yes, I do.
Okay, and are they prescribed openly, or are they prescribed for specific animals? Do you hold them to use as needed when?
The Evanamine I hold to use as needed in emergencies. The bute is prescribed to specific animal.
To hold these medications that you're using for animals that you do not own, but you're boarding, have you been inspected as any kind of premise that can hold these medications legally?
No.
Okay.
Can I add to that?
Yeah.
I think that you will find that every forest boarding facility has Evanamine on hand.
I understand that. That's one of the issues. But that was my question, is these are prescription medications that are supposed to be dispensed out on a prescription basis, and I didn't know if you were licensed to hold these medications under specific statutes, or if there is medications you have that you use, when the veterinarian tells you to use them.
The latter.
It's under livestock rules, and there are no statutes that cover that.
Prescription medications are?
It has to be labeled, which it's labeled. It does not have to be for one specific animal.
But there's a charge for these two.
It has to be labeled for a condition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but she's the third party.
Well, and that's the question.
So she's buying it and charging the consignment customer that there's that contract and agreement, and doing what their veterinarian told her to do.
Yeah,
and when they're not there, she does it, right?
Dog cat boarding facility would charge to give medications too.
What's that?
Any dog cat boarding facility would charge to give medications
but
too.
They don't hold a stock of cephalexin dispense from their facility.
They don't. But I would say
she's not holding the stock. She's got an emergency stash.
And it's not.
But the rest of it's all coming from the veterinarian. Here, do this.
I mean, you need to have.
If you're going to have the animals on your place, you got to have it there.
I wouldn't argue that.
Yeah. Okay.
Because again, then you can willy-nilly prescribe these things as needed, where there's no inspection of the veterinarian saying, okay, go ahead and give it. I mean, it's opening up a lot of liability when you're holding prescription medications. I mean, I thought prescription medications were prescription for a reason. That's just me, so.
Okay, but the doctor can prescribe to you that, okay, if this happens, do this.
From your stock? Can I go to you as a personal person and say, you have some Evanamine I'm prescribing it from you, license as a distributor, or a license as a pharmacy, or a dispensary?
I think there's some confusion because Because with Banamine and Bu in injectable form, a doctor cannot just dispense one injection because it won't maintain its sterility in the vial.
Yeah.
I've only ever seen equine practitioners dispense full vials when they're dispensing injections. Now, Dr. Byrne may be able to elaborate further, but as far as my experience as a vet tech in veterinary medicine, I've only ever seen full bottles of like new powder or full tube of that you have to give, you know, 5 grams, right? I've never seen it in individual dose. I've only ever seen it in that form.
Yeah, we're licensed to use multi-use vials or even single-use as multi-use, again, under different statutes and laws, but we are also inspected as facilities to be able to hold these medications outside of the ability for clients to access these things, certain drugs even are lock and key, these kinds of things. There's rules for that. That's just because
we're not.
But again, we don't have any inspection to show these things because we're not a licensed dispensary. That's my concern is, can we legally hold these things to dispense out to the public?
I think you're
going to
try to say something.
Yeah. Ms. Frost first.
I was just saying, I understand what you're saying, but I think you're thinking of it from the small animal aspect. There are different statutes that apply to livestock, and I think that's what the ability kind of explains. But again, maybe Dr. Lund can elaborate.
Yeah, I mean, there's several formulations of both of those medications. It's either oral formulations of tape Banamine or injectable Banamine. It's not uncommon in equine or livestock enterprises to prescribe either Banamine tape or a bottle of Banamine injectable because there's a single dose administration. It's a very commonly used medication, and it's something that we do typically use first line of defense on any abdominal pain in horses, and it's pretty much a first step treatment. There are times, you know, ideally that you would have had a veterinarian in there before the person would have administered the Banamine, but and a lot of times oral administration can be done, and then you have about 45-minute lag to have some effect. The IV administration is about a 10-15 minute effect, so. It is very common practice to have that medication dispensed to animals, individual animals, even a bottle of Banamine, just to have prophylactically. And there's a problem, and if you have a cough issue and you get a hold of your veterinarian and you can't be there, or she cannot be there for a certain, you know, time period, a lot of times they'll have that Banamine administered to the animal while they're in route. That's just kind of standard practice with emergency farm calls.
And I agree with that, but in my experience, all these drop ships and everything that we've done has always been for a dairy who owns all those animals, not a boarding facility that's boarding to the public.
Okay, feedlots are in Simon. Feedlot doesn't own those cattle. They may partner on some, they may own some, but the customers own those cattle. And they consignment feed those cattle, but they do all of everything. They buy all that medicine, and then they charge it out with the feed. They mix the feed the animals, and they charge for the feed. They charge it every time they run through the chute. They charge them for the vaccines, they charge them for any antibiotics they use, prescription, which almost all of them are prescription. They're gonna get charged for it. And the labels are not written. The veterinarian is not writing a label for, okay, we've diagnosed these with Mannheimia hemolytica, so you're going to get in this. No. It's just general, broad, okay, if you see this, here's going to be the first thing you're going to use. If that doesn't work, here's the second one. Right? You're going to have a procedure. I'm going to necropsy. First one that drops, we're going to necropsy it. Or you're going to call me and I'm going to try to necropsy it. Right? Or I want you to collect these tissue samples, and I'll give you a list. And we're going to draw some eye fluid, and take a piece of the liver, and take a sample of the larynx, and then they'll give you a list. Of, okay, I want you to put this in formula, this on ice. This, make sure you don't freeze it, but keep it cool. I want this in a vacutainer. I want this in just a plastic bag. And you'll have a whole list of things, but it's not for one specific animal. And it's gonna come in a 500 mil, or a 250, or a 100. Some vaccines come 1,000 doses.
Mr. Bailey, in those cases, isn't the veterinarian dispensing to the owner or like the?
No, he's writing the prescription and the distributor's selling to them.
Because the only way that you get around being able to dispense or inject medications is if you're employed by a veterinarian.
Yeah. Yeah, one shot is not just.
Which is why we have to change that rule, because that's not the way it's done.
But that's not how it is now, but livestock is not just, it's a cow, do whatever you want, it's a horse, do whatever you want.
No, and that's not the way people treat it. That's not the way she's treated.
Well, that's the question I have here, is like.
Well, we saw from the veterinarian. You got the veterinarian account.
Yeah, but we're holding these medications, we're holding these prescription medications and using them, it's like, do we have any medications?
A little bit, she's got enough for one time.
A little bit of breaking the law, still breaking the law potentially, so it's like, that's the question.
Yeah, but she's less breaking the law.
Because we're doing it here and there.
You haven't pointed out anything where she's breaking.
Well, that's what I'm saying, it's prescription medication, why are we holding prescription medication?
And she's got a prescription, it's got the label on it for the veterinarian.
So I'm just saying, what are we doing with just giving these prescriptions out willy-nilly? And again, is that what you want?
She paid for it, that's why she's charging the other person for it.
But you just said, that's how it should be, that's not how it is.
What do you mean that's not?
You're like, well, that's why we need to change the rule.
No, no, you just said that. Because nobody even knows about that rule, nobody enforces it.
But that's my question here.
Nobody enforces it, and you're not going to enforce it.
Well, that's what's before us.
Well, no, it's not.
I feel like this is a.
Mr. Chairman, I will be going to executive session.
For what? This needs to be dismissed, we can get on with it.
Well, I feel like this issue probably warrants a bigger discussion onto our statutes and how they're written. But what I would say is, this practice happens everywhere. Everywhere, every boarded horse I've known, some come with medication, some I have medication, like, this is not an issue that I feel like is not rampant out there. And if you're gonna start to enforce it at one, I think we're gonna open a can of worms, and we probably need to figure out our statutes before we do that.
Well, I mean, the statutes are what are written right now. So
I know,
have to apply
but is
statutes
that
as
what,
written.
But is that what we're going to do? Because that is not consistent with,
well,
every horse boarding facility that you go to is gonna have this.
But again,
people
speed all the time,
you
can still get
see?
Pulled over for speeding. So, I mean, just because it happens a lot, I mean, we can only deal with the people that come in front of us. You can't just.
You got a legal prescription, a legal product with a legal label that you pay for.
I mean,
my bigger issue is ensuring that
she's talking to the veterinarian before she's choosing to get these medications. We have an issue in the profession about how the statute's written and where these medications are coming from, and maybe it needs to stop, but that needs to stop with the veterinarians not dispensing it, not with the people who are just following what have been told to them. So to me, I'm like, if we want to go back and look at the statutes and discuss that, great, and do we need a change? Maybe, but this case, in my mind, needs to go. It's, she's not
we have one ill-written rule that needs to be fixed.
Well,
because you're not going to. There's no way commerce is going to let you do what you're describing.
But just we had a motion and a second for executive session, so I think we have to follow up on that motion at this point.
Do we have a second?
Yeah, I seconded it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All those who want to go into executive session, say aye.
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 All those opposed?
Aye.
Nine. Yeah. It appears the ayes have it, and we will go into executive session. How many times did you say we could do this, and then we had to stop?
We already exceeded
the quota. That's a mess. Have we lost Ms. Frost?